This is WMUK's Let's Hear It, Music of the Moment in West Michigan. Glad you could come along. I'm Kara Lawrence. Jazz singer Cecile McLaurin-Salvant and a trio led by Aaron Deal will open the Fontana season this Friday. Juilliard trained Aaron Deal as a top player in jazz piano, as Kalamazoo audiences discovered in 2010 and 2012 when he performed on the Gilmore Rising Stars series and the Gilmore Festival. Thanks, Aaron, for taking the time to talk to me today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
What do you recall from your past performances in Kalamazoo?
Well, a few notable performances in Kalamazoo are associated with the Gilmore Festival. One time was trio, and another time was solo. I love playing there, and looking forward to returning and hopefully seeing some familiar faces in the audience.
I saw that if you go even farther back, there's a time you spent the Interlochen Arts Academy, a bit farther north of us. Was that an influential period of your life?
Absolutely. I went to Interlochen two summers for 2 weeks each summer. And I attended the summer camp as a classical piano major. But I met someone who I think was really instrumental in my interest in jazz, and that was Eldar Jangiro. And Eldar goes just by his first name now professionally, and he was at the time a jazz piano prodigy. He was brought over from Kyrgyzstan and was a protege of Dr. Billy Taylor's. At the time, he had to be probably 10, 11 years old. I mean, he was a really small guy. So we hung out quite a bit, and he was really fantastic sort of inspired me to consider furthering my studies in jazz piano. And I already had some knowledge of jazz just from my grandfather, who plays trombone and piano. His name is Arthur Baskerville, but I never had up until that point, a serious interest in pursuing the genre on a more serious level.
Today, you can go and study jazz at the collegiate level and the doctoral level, if you like, but I think the tradition in jazz is also to have a mentor, have someone kind of teach you the ins and outs on a personal level. Did you also have a mentor?
Absolutely. I have several mentors, both locally and nationally, internationally. I studied with a guy by the name of Mark Pfluge. He's since passed, but he was a respected musician in the community, and I was very fortunate in that Central Ohio. At that time, especially, had a very strong jazz community. So there were several musicians from Mark Pfluge, of course, but Hank Marr, who was an older musician, played organ, D3, and played the piano. There was Bobby Floyd, and a lot of the Columbus local musicians who were very influential. And then I met Todd Stoll, who was the director at the time of the Columbus Youth Jazz Orchestra. He the Columbus Youth Jazz Orchestra, the CYJO for short, was a Central Ohio jazz band for high school students. And Todd was the one who introduced me to much of Duke Ellington's big band repertoire, Charles Mingus, Neil Hefti, the Count Basie book. So he had a very strong inclination towards big band music and helped me develop that style of piano playing. He's a trumpet player, though, and was very close, still is very close to Wynton Marsalis. And actually, Todd is now the head of education at Jazz Lincoln Center in New York City. So it was through Todd that I met Wynton, And through Winton, then, you know, I establishing a relationship with him, where he encouraged me to try out for Juilliard, for the Juilliard Jazz Program, which at that time was about 93 years old. And I eventually got accepted in the Juilliard Program, and that's when I moved to New York City.
I think of a mentor as being different from a teacher who you see once a week and you get assignments from, that kind of thing. And a mentor, you get a chance to hopefully kind of play with them, and they hear you as a young person learning jazz and give you this space to grow with some wise suggestions here and there.
I think that's a very accurate definition, and I think Wynton Marsalis certainly on a very large scale. I mean, he was the one who had invited me to play on the road with him before I even got to set foot into Juilliard, and I mean, besides just being had given me the opportunity to play in his band when I really wasn't ready, he was also there, I think, for in a number of ways, support in my development as a human being, as a musician. And even now, I don't talk to him as much as maybe I did when I was 17 or 18. I'll give him a call, and you know, I'll try to get some advice from him on certain situations. I mean, he certainly has been a very instrumental part of my life, but certainly he hasn't been the only mentor. But I think that's just a very concrete example of somebody who's been there throughout the years and has been very supportive.
Listeners will remember how rock and roll got started in the 50s, and now it's about 65 years old, and we've seen styles and different trends happen every decade at least in that genre. Jazz is older than that. Goes back to late 19th, early 20th century, and also has gone through, as you said, big band. It's gone through New Orleans, Kansas City, New York, all of these traditions, right?
Right.
This is the puzzle of today's modern jazz pianist. You can draw from any of these traditions, and I'm wondering what you do to bring them together and how you learn them.
I love that question because I think I've always been interested in languages, and I don't speak any foreign language fluently. I took German for several years, and I'm conversing in German, and I'm just learning some French now because I've been traveling quite a bit with Field to France and French-speaking countries, and she's completely fluent in French. And you know, the more I'm learning languages and the better I'm getting at them, even if, you know, I'm just learning a little bit at the time, what I'm realizing is music is a language and idioms of music are languages in themselves. Okay. And jazz has its own language. And the more you learn the various, if you want to call them styles, the various, I mean, it's all evolutionary. So I feel like when you're listening to the music of the 1930s or the 1920s, there's some connection to the music that's being played today. So it's just a continuum, and I use that theme in my latest album, Space Time Continuum. It's all a continuum. It's not about relegating styles and eras. Okay, this is the style Louis Armstrong in the mid-1920s, which is high fives, high sevens. Okay, now we're going to play in the style of Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie, and then I'm going to go and play in the style of Ornette Coleman. No, it's all connected, and you use all of these dialects or the different points of evolution of the language to help inform your own artistic identity. And it takes a while, it takes a very long time to even feel like you're getting somewhere with it. And I feel like even playing jazz now for, I don't know, 15 years or so, I'm starting to feel like I'm just beginning to understand the possibilities of becoming fluent in the language of jazz. But, you know, I feel like the more music I listen to, whether it's Herbie Hancock, whether it's Stan Kenton, whether it's a singer like Maxine Sullivan, whoever, the more fluent I become in the sound comes out eventually in my playing. Whatever I listen to informs what I play. And it's the same when you're trying to speak a foreign language. You hear, like I was telling somebody, when I first started hearing French, I couldn't understand one word. I couldn't identify in one word. But the more I'm in France, the more I'm learning the language, the more I can kind of piece out, I can separate and filter certain words that I know. And so the more you hear the jazz language, the more you become familiar with it, and it's not something that you should relegate. Certain eras have certain characteristics and traits, but they shouldn't be assessed in isolation. It should all be in connection with everything that came before it and everything that came after it. That's how I see it.
It sounds like to become the artist you want to be, you decided to go through the music and go into it and deeper rather than try to put it all to one side and create something original on your own.
I think that's a great summary. I think that the deeper you go into something, the more revealing about who you are and yourself it will become. I think those things will come out. And I even feel it over the last few years, especially, like, wow, the more I listen to Bud Powell, the more I learn about myself, because I'm learning the language, you know? And when I'm able to express something through the language, I mean, ultimately, my own voice will come out. I can never sound like Bud Powell. I can never sound like Art Tatum or anybody else. I think that's a very important, I really try to impress that upon younger musicians, because I think there's this idea that you have to be innovative and you have to, you know, if you have the genius, you're going to be innovative. And not everybody, I mean, very few people have that kind of genius of a Mozart, of a Charlie Parker, of an Ornette Coleman. But you can still be yourself. And I think at the end of the day, that's what's most important, being yourself. But you can't articulate what you want to say properly unless you know how to speak the language. And that requires listening, and more listening, and practice.
Et puis tout seul dans le silence d'une nuit qui n'en finit plus, voilà que soudain on y pense à ceux qui n'en sont pas revenus.
How did you meet Cécile McLaurin-Salvant?
I met Cécile McLaurin-Salvant on Skype, and I was recommended to her by her manager, who's also Linton Marsalis' manager. So we met on Skype. She was living in France at the time. I was in New York. And, so she heard some compositions that I played on YouTube that were posted. And so she decided that maybe it was a collaboration she wanted to consider, and I'm really fortunate that, you know, she's come into my life, because she's incredibly special, and I think she's a kind of the quintessential example of someone who has taken the language and really gotten into the depth and the meat of that language, and simply has created her own unique sound. I mean, it's evident that she's studied and she's listened to a lot of music, but when you hear her, I mean, I immediately know it's Cécile Salvant. And it's really amazing. Like, I feel like I can't really say that about too many musicians, especially in my generation, but I can say that about her.
About how long ago was this?
This was around 2012, beginning 2012.
Now, you've just released an album called For One to Love, and just a couple of days ago, the Los Angeles Times put up a review, a rave review. I don't know if you've even seen it yet. I just want to say congratulations. Is this the first album you've done with Cecile, or is there another?
We recorded together in Woman Child. That was our first project, I think that was released 2013.
Mm-hmm.
This is my second album with her. It's the first album, though, with the band, with the trio. And just to quickly give you a little insight to that, the trio has been playing together for 5 or 6 years, and that got its start at Small's Jazz Club in New York City, playing with Lawrence. It was his band. He played late night on Fridays. So just from sheer repetition, playing so frequently with each other, we started to really develop a chemistry. And I think Cecile's manager had recognized this, and that's one of the reasons why he had recommended us. So it was really great to have a recorded document of our playing together, which we really haven't had before, other than an album that I released live a few years back of 2011, I think, or 2010, a live album where they're on about 2 tracks.
I assume that the set list for Friday will include a lot of selections from the new album?
Yes, I'm probably a large percentage will be from One to Love.
And on the album itself, it's a mixture of standard tunes or unexpected standards, as well as original songs.
Right. You know, it's funny because I don't even like to take standards, because standards imply, using the word standards implies that these compositions are standard, that you could call them anywhere, people would know them. But the origin of a lot of our improvisational material, they come from the American songbook, or they come from the blues, the folk tradition, or they come from originals. And I think all of those origins of repertoire are represented on this album. You have songs by like Oscar and Hammerstein. Cecile has written 5 compositions for the album. And then there's one particular piece by Clarence Williams, popularized by Bessie Smith, called What's the Matter Now, which is a blues. So she really covers all the ground, I feel, in the tradition of repertoire that we commonly use in jazz.
One of the original songs is called Look at Me. And I would say in the first 30 seconds of her singing, I heard the most incredible upper high soprano notes, and I fell in love with that sound. And then suddenly she swoops down and gives me this throaty, rich contralto sound. And I realized this is a very unusual singer.
Look at me. Why don't you look at me the way you look? But I'm in love with you endlessly.
The way she sings a song and also tells a story, to me, it's so rare to have this confluence of perfection like this. She's so unique. I wonder where she could go from here.
I think she only can go up, really. I mean, she's very important to our culture. I think a culture, to be honest, that, you know, looks for immediate gratification, looks for, you know, we're in a technological era right now. Era of, you know, out with the old, in with the new. You know, you have the iPhone 6 coming out, and then, okay, the iPhone 5 is old, and then the 6X comes out, or then, you know, the new gadgets and gizmos. We have discussions about this all the time, Cecile and I, but it's all about quality. And the human soul hasn't really changed in pretty probably ever. So you can read Greek mythology. You can read Shakespeare. you can hear a story about or go to a play about something that's happening today, and you can find common ground with all of those things.
I find it so interesting to learn that she, you know, was originally pursuing some sort of degree in Baroque opera voice when she started out.
Oh, yeah. She loves that stuff, and she knows it deeply. She's not as confident, I feel like, as she should be about singing it. We sometimes, in our own, on our own time, will play, some music from the Baroque era. She'll bring in some compositions, and she'll try to challenge me on reading figured bass. she knows that music very deeply, and I think she's just someone who is very intuitive, again, with languages. I mean, she speaks three languages already, and so when it comes to music, it really translates to the music. I mean, anything she hears, she can sing, and she can execute, and she has an instrument. I see a very bright future, definitely, for Cecile, somebody like her is desperately needed today.
You can hear her way with French on Le Mal de Vivre, and as well as your way with Baroque and, you know, Bach-style playing, and maybe the influence of John Lewis there on that track.
Yeah, I love John Lewis. Yeah, and then Bach, of course. I think somebody asked me not too long ago about my playing, and they hear these influences, Bach or whatever. And the truth is, I play where I come from. I play who I am. You might not hear hip-hop influences or funk influences or other styles of music, not because I don't like them, because I do. I love The Roots. It's actually one of my favorite bands. But the fact is, I never played that music. And so it's not something that I came up playing. So the things that I grew up playing were classical music. I grew up listening to jazz and later playing jazz, the music of Duke Ellington or music of Mongo or whatever. And so I play the music that is closest and deepest and nearest to my experience and the best way I can feel I can express myself. And I think it's very important, especially because we have so much available to us now in terms of music. I think it's important for artists to remember that, you know, to play music, to execute art from your experiences and not try to do it because it's something that's in vogue or trendy or it's something that you feel like you should do because it's of the time.
Right. It's a bit of a losing game if you don't trust yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, is it true that next week after you play Fontana and the Kalamazoo venue on Friday, you're headed to the Hollywood Bowl?
That's correct. Yeah, we're playing with Cecile. That's going to be incredible. I'm looking forward to that. It's funny because there's so many things going on right now with us. You know, I don't think we're really dwelling on the fact that we're playing there. But I mean, it's a great experience. I mean, you know, what can I say?
Well, I wish you all the best of luck and congratulations on turning the big 3-0 at the end of this month.
Yes, the 22nd of September. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm waiting to like turn into like a wild animal or something like that. I don't know what's going to happen. So,
well, thank you so much for your time, Aaron. It's really been an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you so much.